It's just two different worlds, right? When those two games played.
Well, there were maybe five ankles left in the NBA playoffs at this point, so.
Trae Young's ankle. Jordan, give me an update on Trae Young's ankle. We come back to the Sports Hangover on ESPN New Orleans.
Wonder if you should get tested for colorectal cancer? Well, it's the second leading cancer killer in the U.S., and screening helps prevent it. So if you're 50 or older, it's time. Even if it doesn't run in your family, most often colorectal cancer occurs in people with no family history. And it doesn't always cause symptoms, especially early on, so don't wait for symptoms to get tested. Screening helps prevent the disease by finding precancerous polyps so they can be removed. Remove the polyp, prevent the cancer. Screening also helps find colorectal cancer early when treatment works best. You might be thinking, oh no, not that test. But here's the thing, you have options. There's more than one screening test. Talk to your doctor to find the one that's right for you. No more excuses. If you're over 50, get tested. Because colorectal cancer screening really does save lives. A message from HHS and CDC's Screen for Life campaign.
In the Army National Guard, family means everything.
Our parents, they were really supportive that all five of us would join. I got my education because of the Guard. I got to travel a little bit and experience a whole different culture. It helped me get my job, helped me pay for my house.
Serving part-time in the Army National Guard instills pride that you and your family will share. Visit NationalGuard.com to learn more about part-time service. Sponsored by the Louisiana Army National Guard. Aired by the Louisiana Association of Broadcasters and this station.
What happened was unthinkable. Work as we know it powered down. But Etail is here to keep business on. On to turn your home office into a powerhouse. On to plan your epic power lunch. On to keep your virtual team connected. On to make you unstoppable. This is the one thing Etail Business can do for you, and that's connecting you to work every day. Etail is on for business.
You're listening to ESPN 100.3 FM, KLRZ, La Rose, New Orleans, and the River Region.
It's the Sports Hangover with Gus Kattengill.
Hello, sports fans.
Well, hello there.
Local sports, national sports. The GCAT has got you covered.
Oh, you made a wise choice, my friend.
Time to tee it up and let it fly. It's the Sports Hangover with Gus Kattengill.
Check it out, Jordan.
Hour number three of the Sports Hangover off and running. Tweet at us at ESPN Radio NOLA. You can give us a call at 800-998-1003. Last night, Western Conference Finals, the Clippers get a win.
Jackson on the move. Jackson drives and punches it home. Oh, he flexed on him. Timeout, Monty Williams in Phoenix.
It's quiet, huh?
It was quiet.
You could hear everything. Yikes.
Abdel Nader with the corner three, no good. And rebounded by the Clippers. And
I mean, it's
just about
quiet
it.
In there.
Barrel gets it in the front court.
Yep.
The closeout game, the closeout win, is sometimes the most difficult and elusive to get as it eludes the Phoenix Suns tonight. As the Los Angeles Clippers behind Paul George's 41 points and 13 rebounds. Doris Burke, they shoot 55% from the field to make it a 3-2 series.
So we had a Devin Booker game against the Lakers, pretty much. Like, Paul George kind of pushed that game forward.
Paul George has been balling his butt off since Kawhi's gone down. Now, don't get me wrong. Terrence Mann and Reggie Jackson have absolutely stepped up to the point that everyone's convinced now Reggie Jackson's going to get a one-year $80 million deal. He's this guy. But Paul George has stepped up. I mean, look, he missed the two free throws. I get it. I do. But.
Okay. Tell that to all of the Pelicans.
No,
fans.
I'm fully aware. But look.
I mean, even Michael Jordan had his issues with free throws, but like.
Here's Mike Greenberg this morning on the Paul George narrative, because it's either, you know, playoff P or pandemic P.
Last night, Paul George had the kind of night that changes your legacy. It's time for Straight Talk, brought to you by Straight Talk Wireless. This was very much like what we saw from KD a week ago. This was narrative changing. On the road, season on the line, 15 of 20, 41 points, Perfect from the line, 13 rebounds. That was epic.
Disagree.
That is genuinely the stuff of legend.
I'll take massive overreactions for 500.
If it was, if it was a game seven and he did that,
right.
I would agree.
So you're still pandemic peeing him?
They haven't won this. They're down in the series. So it's 3-2.
Here's my issue with all of this, right? Are we, cause we just talked about a receiving core with the Saints and a quarterback here. Is it you have to go 400 yards, three TDs, or can you, is there any in between?
That's what I mean. You don't have to be sexy to win a game.
I mean, like, at the end of the day, could he have led the Clippers with 23 points and made a big play? Is it the timing of a big play?
I mean, I think he's made big plays throughout this playoffs, but I'm not saying that his legacy is completely changing because of one single game in the playoffs. I mean, like I said, if it was a game seven, to go to the NBA Finals and he put up that stat line, then I would say, well, that's a career-defining moment for Paul George.
I mean, it's pretty similar again to Devin Booker against the Lakers, and that's like eliminating defending champions and like the most against defending champion in postseason history. And it wasn't, oh my God, I mean, he got accolades, but right. Like, I'm failing to see the mass difference here that is like legacy altering in like one game. Like, maybe
cause he's a good player.
Yeah. I mean, it's one player. Thing if you say like, see this series out, but this could be the start of defining his legacy. But to say that this game has like definitively changed the narrative.
Right.
Well, now if he goes
anything.
Out and like, you know, lays a turd on the field, then, or the court, and then like, what are you saying now?
It's like Zion. When he eventually makes it to the playoffs, putting up 30 plus points in a playoff game and then them get bounced in the first round.
Well, look, it's funny you bring that up because I was going to get to this in tonight's series, but the Giannis Batman talk.
Yeah.
Okay. I'm with you. I want to play this a little bit, but I want to ask you all this. He said it going into this game. He didn't want to hear it. Everyone's like, oh, now you're going into the NBA Finals. And Chris Paul was like, stop it. I've been up 3-1 before. It's now 3-2. They're going to LA. The Clippers have looked, they probably should be up in this series, to be honest with you. Chris hasn't looked himself since coming back from the COVID thing. It almost looked like Phoenix played better without him, which I dare say. And it's just, they don't look.
Well, it's hard to.
I'm looking for DeAndre Ayton. I mean, like, I'm, you know, seriously, I know he did the tip in, but should he be playing? I guess what I'm saying is if they go to L.A. tomorrow and lose.
The microscope is going to be on Chris Paul,
right? Because, I mean.
Well, the thing, too, is, like, I wonder how much, you know, he's very much a facilitator on that offense. And so having to lose him and then having to compensate for that, I can see kind of, like, him maybe being out of place when he returns. But
his legacy.
His legacy hurt. Is on the line here.
His legacy gets severely because pushed
that,
down
well, that
if
becomes
he blows
his
a
legacy.
3-1 lead.
Well, that becomes his legacy.
He cannot get over the hump.
That becomes his legacy.
The next Charles Barkley. But maybe
not
worse.
Not at all. Definitely got to be better. They came out and they were the aggressors. They sort of looked like us in game four. And they hit us. They was a lot. They were too comfortable. And we got to be better. We got to close quarters better. You know what I mean? Like, that's been a problem for us all series long is closing quarters, those last 2.5, 3 minutes of the quarters, you know, we took the lead, maybe cut it to 1 or 2, and then they get a bucket, and then they go on a run. So look at it, see what we need to do better, and get ready for the next one.
Jack, thanks for giving us a call here on the Sports Hangover. Sir, how are you? Hello, Jack?
Bueller?
Hey, hello?
Hey, man, how are you?
All right. Guys, I have to admit, I'm pulling for CP3, but I did like how Jackson clowned him when he fell the other night. I just thought that was amusing. But hey, look, about the Saints, the quarterback thing, we won't know what's gonna happen until it happens, you know, until they go through camp and all. But the thing that sticks in my mind is why nobody would offer either one of these guys real quarterback money.
Well, I mean, I think before you start offering real quarterback money, you got to find out if they're your real quarterback. And I think that's on both aspects of it, right? I mean, I don't think anybody would offer real. I mean, no one's paying for. Well, first
I was
off,
say,
Maddie,
Taysom
real quarterback money today is 30 to 40.
Right. But Taysom didn't make pennies.
Right.
Now he's on.
No, but I mean, they're not even making it in the 20s. You know,
yeah, they're both on prove-it deals. It's prove-it.
Right.
Deals.
Well, I mean, I know there's a lot of you know, apologizing for what's happened to Jameis so far in his career. But the fact is, this is year seven. So the rest of the league has seen him, and they're passing.
I'm with you. I don't think that this is as wrapped and shut as everyone might think. But who's like, yeah, I just think it's really hard to tell. And I think, again, that the fact that we haven't seen any formal form of practice is somewhat deliberate in that fashion.
Right.
Jack, the question today. Go ahead.
No, go ahead.
We were talking about today a position group. We're going to do this every week leading into training camp. And today we approached the receivers. What's your overall thoughts on the receiving group as a position group?
I think it's the worst group in the division.
That'd be fair, Manny?
I mean,
they're behind
Atlanta
Tampa.
Falcons say hello.
Well, you think the Falcons position group is worse than the Saints?
I think that after they lost Julio, it's debatable. Sure, they have a little more proveness than like Calvin Ridley, but like I'd say Michael Thomas is a better receiver than Calvin Ridley, who's their wide receiver one. And I think, again, we've talked about the potential of this squad. It's just that we don't know yet. But, yeah. I mean, Carolina and Tampa, absolutely. It's hard to argue with that.
When's the last time, you know, you said that your wide receiver position helped win you a Super Bowl?
We always forget about the fact, though, that Alvin Kamara isn't not also a receiving threat.
Right.
And that's what other teams in the division, in my opinion,
don't have. But to the same point, though, would you say Christian McCaffrey is part of the receiving core for the Panthers? He adds that element.
He does, but I think that Alvin Kamara, there's a much more deliberate vision there where he can actually, catch, 30-yard pass. I mean, he played quarterback. He's a very versatile guy that is transcendent of the position. And right. I think that, again, there was a clip at the end of the Falcons game where Sean Payton had kind of seen something at the goal line between Alvin Kamara and Taysom Hill. And that wasn't really able to come to fruition. But Alvin Kamara to me is someone that could add a level of dynamicness to this offense that is almost necessary. And then maybe the receiving corp can kind of fan out after that.
Interesting. Very interesting. Jack, of the receivers that we talked about, too, who do you think will be a receiver we're going to talk a lot more about this year other than Michael Thomas?
You know, I don't know. I mean, you see a lot of potential, but, I mean, is it going to happen when they, you know, when somebody has to step into the Emmanuel Sanders role?
Right.
Are they going to be able, you know, when you're the third or fourth wide receiver, I think it's easier to make plays. I don't think teams are really looking for you. So, I guess we'll find out in training camp. I think the Tre'Quan Smith, that ship has sailed. I just think if he was going to be anything, he'd have been there by now.
Okay. Easy enough.
Yeah. So, but guys, thanks for taking my call. Y'all have a good afternoon.
Not a problem.
I think a lot of the Tre'Quan Smith question, too, comes down to, year three was kind of supposed to be the year that everyone kind of looked at it. But when I saw a snap story or Instagram story right after the loss that he had a wrist surgery pretty much, I'm like, when did that happen? And I feel like the true health of the Saints was a lot graver.
And Maddie, you bring up an interesting thing because I almost feel like, again, I understand there's disappointment and there's frustration level with the Saints fan base and Nine's easy to look at, or even Sean not using Latavius Murray. You know, poor Brian still has yet to get over not using Latavius Murray in that game against the Vikings. But this is one thing, and again, I don't know if there's something to that or not. This team has been unable to stay healthy as the season ends and into the postseason. You had a Super Bowl team the year that you play the Rams. But that offensive line, the last several, it started with that Bengals game. I mean, it went downhill. And that O-line that kept Drew Brees with zero sacks in the Week 8 meeting against the Rams got annihilated in that game against the Rams. The following year, Maddie, we had Ed Daniels on, who famously said, and look, he, you know, votes for the Saints Hall of Fame. He's been following football longer than me. He's like, I looked at that film several times in that game, in our highlights. Said the Vikings didn't do anything special. They stunted, and then they just beat their guy one-on-one.
Yeah, they collapsed right. The interior. And that's what enter Zach Streif.
So that's my point. That's like it, but again, injuries sort of hurt there. The defensive line, you know, suffered injuries. And again, I don't know if there's anything to it. And the only reason I'm bringing it up is because it was something you brought up when it comes to the Pelicans the last several years. It's why you went out and got Aaron Nelson. So I don't know if it's maybe why, Maddie. Sean's completely fine with not doing anything right now and trying to get this team as healthy as possible.
It happens every year where everyone's mad about the draft, everyone's right. mad about the lack of free agency, and then right. something ends up in place,
but that might be a question we asked Sean the first day of training camp. You know, when you look back at the last several years, every team suffers injuries and every team has to deal with things. But, I mean, the Kansas City Chiefs.
Tell that to San Francisco.
I'm sure they didn't think that they were going to have the entire offensive line out, essentially, for the Super Bowl. Is there anything you can do, or is football one of those games where it's the luck of the draw?
That's where Taysom Hill has the edge to me, because if your O-line crumbles, then the guy with legs is the better guy.
Good point. Sports Hangover continues next on ESPN New Orleans.
Used to feel we could sail away. Can you imagine?
Today's Medical Minute is provided to you by Thibodeau Regional Medical Center.
Hello, I'm Billy Nakian, the director of the Spine Center of Excellence at Thibodeau Regional. Have you had a recent neck or back injury, or have you been suffering with recurrent neck and back pain? Have you been searching for relief? Thibodeau Regional has developed a unique approach to treating neck and back disorders. The Spine Center of Excellence provides a comprehensive, patient-centered approach to ensure that you receive the right care at the right time from the right provider. The Spine Center is different because it offers centralized access to multiple specialties and services. Patients and their referring physicians are led by a nurse navigator through a process of assessment and treatment, individually tailored to the patient's unique condition. In addition to total care coordination, the Spine Center's comprehensive services include everything from high-tech diagnostic imaging to physical therapy, surgery, alternative medicines, and chronic pain services. If you're experiencing back or neck pain, call today. 985-493-4501. The Spine Center of Excellence of Thibodeau Regional will put you on the path back to your normal routine.
This Medical Minute was sponsored by Thibodeau Regional Medical Center, nationally recognized for providing the highest level of quality care and patient satisfaction.
Energize your business with Bayou Black Electric Supply in Houma. When you're elbow deep in a job, the last thing you need is to lose time and money fetching electrical supplies. Bayou Black Electric will deliver your items to the job site. There's daily scheduled service throughout South Louisiana, Lafourche, Terrebonne, Morgan City, New Iberia, and Lafayette, plus the river parishes too. If you need parts, call Bayou Black Electric Supply. 985-223-8807, Highway 311 in Houma.
Good afternoon.
Let's hit it.
Now back to the Sports Hangover with Gus Kattengau.
Welcome back. Sports Hangover. Do you want to do quarterbacks next week? I kind of feel like we can do it.
Yeah.
But Ken, I mean, what else is there to really discuss that nobody else has really talked about when it comes to that position group?
Well, I think I think everyone's like, what can you do with Jameis Winston? Mm-hmm. And then everyone, like, no one actually looks at what can you do with, like, Taysom Hill.
Right.
And, like, you look at the creativity that they've been able to use him in tight end, like, running back, quarterback. There's, like, that meme that was, like, running back, quarterback, right? Like, that whole thing. But just, like, imagine if he actually did that kind of creativity within the quarterback role.
Mm-hmm.
You talk about, like, the injuries to the O-line and how that's really been the end-all, be-all multiple times at the end of a couple of last seasons. And then you look at that Vikings game, and Taysom Hill single-handedly, like, kept that team going because, like, at the end of the day, if you have no interior and you don't have any time to pass, the only thing you can do is run. And I feel like that's just not the only thing you can really do with him. I think there's a lot of creativity, and with Sean's brain, I just think there's a lot of potential there that no one's even really willing to entertain because it kind of seems like a joke at this point.
I think when you go back to Drew Brees talking about specifically where he thinks this battle is going to go and the challenge for Sean Payton, I think this is the bite that pulled up. This was back in April. Kind of to your point, too, if you're going to go that route, though, Matty, you're going to have to tailor an offense that best suits him. Right?
Right.
That maybe looks like Baltimore?
Like I was saying before, it's not as difficult and insurmountable as people are led to believe.
This is what Bree said.
Taysom is Taysom's such a weapon because when he's on the field, I mean, think about the perspective of a defensive coordinator. Taysom Hill's on the field. Well, that still doesn't give us a lot of information other than he's going to be an integral part of the play, but is he going to line up at tight end? Is he going to line up at receiver? Is he going to line up in the backfield as a quarterback, or maybe they're pitching it to him on third and short or something, you know? So just this role that he plays and the weapon that he is and the matchup problem that he creates for the opposing defense, he's such a unique player, one of the most unique players I've ever been around from the perspective of what he can do and the value that he brings to a team. And listen, if someone would invest an offense in him, I mean, listen, just like I'd say the Baltimore Ravens have invested in offense in Lamar Jackson, right? He has got such a unique skill set, one that does not exist. I mean, he's kind of a once-in-a-generation type of player from that perspective, talking about Lamar Jackson. But, man, if you commit to his skill set and the things that he does well, then great things can happen, right? And I believe Taysom Hill is that type of player.
Do you think Sean would be able to do that?
If there's anybody who can do it, it's Sean. You know? At the same time, you've got this caliber player in Jameis who I think is kind of ready to explode back on the scene with this knowledge and wisdom that he's been able to derive here over the last year, coupled with his experience already as a starting quarterback. You know, so you've got both these guys, and listen, that therein lies the challenge of the situation, right? Is that I think whoever you commit to, that becomes a system that you build around the player. Just when I first got to New Orleans Saints, the conversations with Sean were, we're putting you in the best position to succeed, and we're building this offense around your strengths and your skill set.
And that's where I think it's going to be, Matty, the most interesting aspect of this four-week period that you have. It's a month. First preseason game, the last preseason game, when you look at it, first preseason game is the 14th, 23rd, 28th. You start in camp. Essentially, I think it's either the 28th or 29th. It's the last week of July. Wednesday the 28th or Thursday the 29th is going to be your first practice. So you got three preseason games a month to try to figure this out. And I think the thing that's interesting to me is this is different than, say, Drew Lock, Teddy Bridgewater. Different than, you know, another quarterback, Justin Fields, Andy Dalton, if you wanted to kind of look at it from that perspective, even though Nagy says that it's Andy Dalton.
Which one's Justin Fields in this case for us?
Exactly. What I'm saying is normal quarterback battles, quote unquote,
aren't actually battles.
Both quarterbacks are running the same system. I think here.
But it is the same system.
See, and that's where I wanted to talk to you about. Because is it the same system? Because to me, you have two quarterbacks that would thrive under different things or aspects to the system. Are you going to run certain plays? Sure. Here we go. Ready? Just doing it to aggravate some people. You're going to throw a slant to Michael Thomas. That's going to be in any system. I get it. But does that specifically make that quarterback different? What does Jameis Winston sort of excel like? The guy wants to push the ball down the field, or whatever it is that you're telling me. Taysom Hill's best attributes.
I don't think we know that.
I think it would be running, using his legs.
Yeah,
right?
That's his best attribute as of now, but I just, you listen to him in interviews. I think he did one with Megan Payton where he kind of explained how a lot of bad habits he picked up, like learning how to block on special teams, hindered his quarterbacking and like could have been like a factor in the fumble, learning how to kind of lead with the shoulder and those types of things. Like fundamentals are incredibly important to me.
But that's my point. One's more developmental than the other. Would you agree?
No.
You don't think one's more developmental than the other? You don't think it would take longer for Taysom Hill to develop into an NFL quarterback than Jameis Winston August 28th? When you have to name a starter.
To me, the end all be all is the interceptions. If he can go over the interceptions, then
both
yes.
are going to throw interceptions. I mean, there isn't a quarterback in history hadn't thrown an interception. Well, but my point is, what I'm trying to make, though, is in 1 month's time, how are you going to determine that? You're going to have to let, if it's Taysom Hill, you're going to have to ride with it and let him learn. And that means succeeding. That means failing. But I also think it means altering. I guess maybe I'm just stuck because I remember the days of LSU having, NFL running back after NFL running back, NFL receiver after NFL receiver. And yet, here's Jordan Jefferson. Let's let the quarterback run. You have Alvin Kamara.
You say this like Michael Thomas. He didn't complete 70% of his passes when he was under center, though.
I understand that. But what I'm saying is if his strength is, I think, running the, you know, the option and doing RPOs, does that help when you have Alvin Kamara, Michael Thomas? I don't know.
That's what I was trying to say before, where like there's the vision I don't think is fully come to fruition, but I'll go back. I want to go back and find that clip because it was just very insightful where Sean had noticed something on the goal line with Kamara and how they could kind of play each other off one another. Trick plays. I know that that's not like the thing that is stands out about an offense, but everyone wanted Alvin Kamara to like throw a pass last year, but that to me seems like something much better suited. Like if you have Alvin Kamara and Taysom Hill back there, like you could pull like a double pass, like the Julian Edelman.
How many
times
you do that though in a season?
I know, but I'm just saying like I don't think that there was time to like work on the Taysom Hill Alvin Kamara relationship, which like I think is one that takes a little more time because.
I got two callers on. I want to play one more bite and we'll get to the phone lines here. Hill's saying, can the offense or should or does the offense maybe tailor towards you?
Yeah, it's a good question. You know, I think the emphasis this offseason really has been a weight room specific deal. To where we have been out on the field with the receivers, the running backs, tight ends, and we're throwing routes that we know we're going to install. But we really haven't had a ton of contact with the coaching staff this offseason. And now that we've, you know, historically here, we've kind of had conversations about the RPO game. And we're continuing to having some conversations, that way. But, you know, we really haven't had a ton of time with the staff to have a ton of those conversations.
And that's the key, Matty. It's gonna be developmental. I mean, so you're gonna have to be okay with maybe not winning as many games early, but once he gets it and once this offense moves that way. So I'm saying, I just think it's different than normal quarterback battles where you're running basically the same thing. Sure, every QB has a play or two that they like. I mean, Jameis Winston said it. He's thrown some things out that he's not comfortable with. So, but I think that's more of a what you have been doing. I think you would be moving in a completely different direction than what you have been with Sean, with Drew.
Well, yeah, because, I mean, and I exactly kind of goes back to that Lamar Jackson, like, running type. Like, yeah, you would definitely see the offense sort of start to change, but is that, to me, that doesn't really affect the personnel. Like, okay. I really want to find that quote from J.T. O'Sullivan where he talked about this because he explained it in a very astute way, but it's like the same personnel. It's the same scheme. It's just different formations.
Well, if we do quarterbacks,
let's
maybe get them on next week. Jeff, thanks for giving us a call here on the Sports Hangover. What you got?
Hey, how are you guys today?
Doing well. How are you?
I'm about a week late on this because I know you guys talked about it last week, but I got the perfect definition of the word poppycock, and it goes like, I believe that anybody other than Jameis Winston is going to be the starter day one. How about that?
Poppycock.
It works in a sentence.
Here's
my thing is,
you got to give him credit right now.
That was hilarious. Yeah.
I did not see that coming.
I did not. That was an audible wheeze or whatever that noise was. That
poppycock.
Oh my God, I hate that thing. But here's my thing. Sean doesn't say things just to say things. He's very deliberate with what he says. Mm-hmm. And if there wasn't a quarterback competition, then they wouldn't be saying there's a quarterback competition because then that's just knocking down Jameis Winston a peg. If this was already wrapped up in a bow, why are you telling everyone that this is an open competition?
Uh-oh.
Well, if you're asking me, my opinion, my belief would be that you don't want to hurt Taysom Hill's feelings. You want to make him believe he's got a shot. I mean, in my opinion, Sean Payton would have not gone out there to get Jameis Winston. That's when I think personally, Taysom Hill lost a quote-unquote lost the starting job, if he ever had it in the first place. The moment Sean Payton went out and got Jameis Winston, I think that's when things kind of changed. Like, he may have said publicly that, well, the starter after Drew Brees is already in the room, but Jameis Winston wasn't available when he said that. Jameis Winston wasn't on the roster when he said that. So right. I think things have changed. And you've got, when you look at the Saints roster, you've got one quarterback in Jameis Winston who's been there, done that, and you've got one quarterback in Taysom Hill that we're kind of waiting to get better. And the truth be told, and you guys might laugh at me, I'm not convinced Taysom Hill is a better quarterback being the key word, than Trevor Siemian. Because I think the Denver Broncos have a knack for making anybody look bad. So, I love Taysom Hill for what he does. I'm glad that he's on my favorite team. He'll always be the circus sideshow, gimmicky player that does some great things. But a true quarterback, I just think it's obvious. The writing's on the wall. I mean, Jameis Winston's the guy.
Well, Jameis Winston was, to my opinion, brought in because Taysom Hill can't be the backup for that reason, because he has such a more dynamic role on the offense. And the deal that Jameis Winston is offered is very much not, to me, locked up starter. Neither of them have contracts that instill confidence. They're incentive-based, and they're both prove-it deals to me. But pandering to Taysom Hill's feelings is just not the end-all be-all of Sean Payton's vision, I don't think.
Jeff, thank you for the phone call. Josh, I see you're on hold. I have to hit the break because we have Sam Quinn on. I need 5 minutes from him. You can hold on, or you can call right back right after I get off the phone with him. But I got to ask him, because he made the list on teams that are maybe favorable in getting Damian Lillard, and he listed the Pelicans in the top five. So I want to talk to him quick, and then I'll come right back to you, Josh, I promise. So Sports Hangover on ESPN New Orleans. Who's watching me?
Mike Dettillia for Neil Small Engine Incorporated. Listen up. That's what we did at Gravely. We listened to lawn professionals. Then we brought the professional performance home. Gravely residential zero turn mowers show the neighborhood that you mean business. Zero turns that are as tough as nails operate a comfort beyond compare. We've had 100 years of professional advice to perfect cutting performance. Just drop the deck, put the neighbors on notice. Gravely, driven from within. At Neil Small Engine Incorporated, locations in Houma, La Rose, and Thibodeau.
Avenue Wine and Spirits has one of the largest and most diverse wine and spirit selections in the city. At 2025 St. Charles Avenue, Avenue Wine and Spirits has some of the rarest bourbons, wines, and Japanese whiskeys, like 18-year-old Yamasaki. Avenue Wine and Spirits sells wine by the glass, and they've got free delivery for orders over $20. Dial 504-522-3864. Never show up empty-handed to a watch party again. Avenue Wine and Spirits, 2025 St. Charles Avenue.
El Paso Mexican Grill and Steakhouse, Highway 1 in Raceland, features fantastic, authentic Mexican food and steaks. They have great lunch specials Monday to Fridays, plus enjoy happy hour from 3 to 7 p.m. with 2-for-1 margaritas. And on Fridays, it's 2-for-1 margaritas from open to close, plus live music on Friday evenings. El Paso Mexican Food and Steakhouse on Highway 1 Raceland.
Sarah Spain.
She is resigning now in this moment because she has been proven to have failed all of those girls.
And me, Jason Fitz, are Spain and Fitz. We are back.
College football has built into it nostalgia.
Sarah Spain.
A connection to a community. This will not have that.
Jason Fitz.
He is, when he is healthy, considered to be one of the great young pieces in the game.
Spain and Fitz returns weekdays at 7 p.m. Eastern on ESPN Radio.
Good afternoon.
Good afternoon.
Only one performance a day.
Well, let's get this show on the road, eh?
Now back to the Sports Hangover with Gus Kattengau.
Had a bit of a stunner? Bit of a stunner, perhaps? We have a score, Ukraine and Sweden, and it is... Score, Maddie?
1-0, Ukraine.
Ooh! Germany going down to the Brits earlier today, 2-0.
Yeah.
Okay. And we await Eastern Conference Finals game tonight. Hawks and Bucks last night. Clippers staying alive and doing that. But all Jordan anyone wants to talk about here is the possibility of Damian Lillard. Mr. Sam Quinn, CBSSports.com, posted yesterday Damian Lillard trade rumors ranking all 29 possible destinations. He has the Pellies in there. Let's bring in Sam at Sam Quinn CBS, the way to follow him over on Twitter, and of course CBSSports.com. Sam, good afternoon, man. Thanks for the time today. How are you?
Oh, absolutely. I'm great. This is
probably my favorite time of the year. We have the best games, but really what's really going on here is we've got the rumors, we've got the big trades. There are always two or three of them around this time of year, and right now it looks like it's going to be Lillard.
Sam, you might have heard, I don't know, it's not a really good kept secret. Apparently Zion's unhappy, and there's some Pelicans fans a little uncomfortable with that. Yeah. So when you add that, look, let's be honest. The last couple of days since the weekend, it's like you do whatever you can to get players like this. We fantasize. We've dreamt. How realistic is it to get Damian Lillard, though, if you're a Pelicans fan?
So I'll put this out there in general. Sooner or later, if you assume that Zion is going to sign the extension after next season, which every rookie in his situation has, given his injury risk, you know, it wouldn't make sense for him to be the first guy to, like, force his way out super, super early. So I would say, assuming he extends, you're probably looking at something like 5 or 6 more years before things get really, really antsy with him. Maybe a little bit less. You never know for sure. But you've got a little bit of runway here is my point. And the way that they've built this team after, you know, trading Anthony Davis for a bunch of young players, a bunch of picks, trading Jrue Holiday for a bunch of picks, they have so much stuff stocked up that they're probably going to make a big trade at some point. You know, usually you get one swing like that in an era, and at some point they're going to make it. The real question isn't necessarily can they get Lillard. I think the answer pretty clearly is yes, if he requests a trade. I think the better question is that the guy you want to take your swing on? Because he's obviously, he's 30, he's getting older, Zion is 20. Like, do you want to tether your best player to somebody who's a decade older and, like, maybe his prime only lasts another year or two? Zion is a special case because with the injuries, you know, you just never know, so you might want to go all in as soon as you can. We sort of saw this with Philly, right? When they went all in with Joel Embiid and they traded for Jimmy Butler and they traded for Tobias Harris, thinking, you know, we don't know how long he's going to last. We've got to do this now. I don't know if that's the way New Orleans is thinking. I don't know if they're willing to be a bit more patient. But when you look at all of the picks they have, when you look at Brandon Ingram, all their other young guys, they can do this if they want to and if Lillard forces the issue. The better question is, should they do it?
Speaking of, it's why you went through the different tiers yesterday. You have the Pels in Tier 1, number 3 overall. Why?
I think it's really, it comes down to just how much they have, right? Like, I think an underrated factor here is that all the teams that you would think Lillard would want to go to, they've already shot their bullets here, right? Like, the Lakers would love to add Damian Lillard, but they traded everything for Anthony Davis. The Clippers would love to trade for Damian Lillard. They traded everything for Paul George. There just aren't that many teams that are left in a position where they can afford to do this, right? Like, I think that's one of the fringe effects of all of these star trades over the last couple of years. Brooklyn traded everything for James Harden. You know, like, sure, he could go to the Knicks, but the problem with doing that is what would they have around him, right? Like, the Pelicans would have Zion. They'd have another star. There just aren't that many teams that can not only afford to give Portland what Lillard is worth, but also put a winner around him so that it's even worth forcing the trade there in the first place.
Speak with Sam Quinn, CBSSports.com at Sam Quinn CBS. I think one of the interesting elements of this, too, especially when you look at today, and you, I don't know if this reports or not, but, you know, there's some sound we played earlier that, you know, Donovan Mitchell could be a name. And I asked Sam, help me here. Who's happy anywhere and who can win anywhere if that's the case? Because I want your opinion on this because I was interested to kind of look at this when that athletic report came out about Zion's unhappiness, is are we approaching the timeline in the NBA at least, where if you have a top-tier talent, number one overall pick, the time frame to quote-unquote win, like big, as in contention for a championship, the rookie window, like the rookie contract window, that's tough to do, isn't it? 5 years?
Well,
4 years?
I mean, if you think about the way that most teams build when they add a top pick, it's they have a top pick for another couple of years, right? Like, as good as a great rookie is, you know, Kevin Durant wins Rookie of the Year in, I think, 2008. Well, they pick Russell Westbrook the next year, and they pick James Harden the year after that. Most of the time, you're inherently pretty bad if you're in a position to draft a player like that, so it takes you a couple of years to build up. I mean, we've never seen the extreme of this, right? We've never seen the situation where a player at the end of their rookie contract says, I'm going to take the qualifying offer and become an unrestricted free agent after my fifth year. What they almost always do is they take the extension after their third year and they lock up through year six, year seven, year eight. I think we're going to eventually see a star who says, you know what? No, I'm confident that I can get the max no matter what, even if I get hurt. I'm going to take the risk and become a free agent as early as possible. I don't think that it's Zion, but somebody's going to do it, right? And I think just the way that the discourse works, one team wins the championship, and that means 29 don't. And if the entire goal is to win the title and, you know, you as a player are trying to position yourself as well as possible to do that,
right?
I understand why more and more players are getting, you know, more frustrated early on, especially, I mean, I think the quiet element of this is when we talk about the superstar trades, we only ever talk about the teams that are getting the superstar. Something that I've been wondering for a long time is, well, eventually, these teams that get all these picks, they're going to get built up, right? Like, over a certain amount of time, let's say the Pelicans just stay put and they, you know, they get shooting around Zion and they keep Lonzo and they keep Ingram and they make all these picks. Well, they have such an inherent advantage over, you know, just a normal star on a normal team, right? Because they have so many more assets and maybe they could even trade for another star. If you're just a guy like, I mean, I'll throw Donovan Mitchell out there.
Yeah.
Donovan Mitchell is on a team in Utah. They have one other star who does not have a great history in the playoffs. They have a bunch of older role players. That team doesn't really look like it's trending in the right direction. I don't think he's frustrated. I don't think he's going to ask out or anything. But I understand why he would look at the landscape and say, like, we just had our best chance to win the title and we couldn't do it. Now what?
I like Donovan Mitchell, too, and that's just crazy because they're the top team, you know, in the West, but they've struggled. You know, I think the thing, too, Sam, that I always find interesting, we talk, obviously, Saints and NFL here, and when you look at baseball or other sports, I think the NBA, and maybe I'm wrong here, but I think it's, I wouldn't even say unique, but when you look at champions or you look at three-peaters and teams that have sort of dominated, I call it the crucible. More than any other sport, you always see these teams, even Toronto, they would get to a certain part, they added Kawhi. Bulls had the Pistons. Pistons had the Celtics. You always have this team that's kind of in your way. You have to learn. It has to hurt. It has to marinate and fester to kind of get into that. And I just don't know how you can kind of build those. I mean, even the Heat, kind of to an extent, or Cleveland, you kind of have to go through some things. Warriors, right? They didn't win immediately, then went on to their thing. I just think the NBA, kind of like the Jazz, maybe they come back stronger next year, having been through this. I don't know.
Well, they might. Like, I'm perfectly open to the idea that the Jazz are a better team next year. But remember, the path was so open for them, right?
Yeah, you're
right.
The
Lakers were out in round one. The Nets were out in round two. The Clippers lose Kawhi. Like, those things aren't all going to happen. Like, you might get one injury. You might even get two. The entire field isn't going to clear for you, right? Like, if they had beaten the Clippers, they would have played the Suns in the first they would have played the Suns in the Western Conference Finals. Chris Paul misses those first two games. Like, you can't ask for a better opportunity than that. It doesn't get easier. So even if you as a team get better, it doesn't matter depending on what's happening, you know, contextually around the league, right? Like, I think there was a good chance. Let's say the Nets had stayed healthy, right? This was the best Milwaukee Bucks team of this era, in my opinion. Even if their record wasn't quite as good, I felt like they were as well prepared for the playoffs as ever.
Right.
The problem was, if they had run into the fully healthy Nets, they would have gotten killed. Yeah. Because the Nets are just that good.
Right.
There's no set criteria for what, like, a championship level is, I guess, right? Like, you can't just say, we have to get to this level and we're going to win the title. It all depends on what's happening around you. And it is never going to get easier for any of these teams than it was this season.
And the Pels did make the playoffs, so I guess to your point, Sam, if you're a Pels fan listening, it's probably why everyone says you do what you have to try to get a player like Damian Lillard and do what you can to try to maximize the time that you have with Zion.
I mean, for what it's worth, I will say I am not nearly as panicked about this Zion stuff as maybe some other people are. The reporting, I think, is legitimate. I just think when you're 2 years in, I just don't know, like, what's he really going to do? Like, even if he says, I want to leave right now, they have 3 years of team control left. That's plenty of time for you to fix the roster. And more likely, he's going to extend. So I would just say, remember, last year was Trae Young's second year. And we were hearing all of these rumblings about how he needs more talent around him, how he's not happy with the way things are going. Well, they're in the Eastern Conference Finals right now. I think Trae Young is fine. I'm not necessarily saying the Pelicans are going to get there, but I think it's maybe a little premature to be panicking already.
All right, I got 60 seconds here. Sam Quinn of CBSSports.com. You kind of gave us a bit of a pep talk here to the Pelicans fans listening. We've seen, obviously, what Atlanta's done. I think Phoenix a bit different. Had a couple of years with Booker and Ayton. Got the coach for 2 years, and you added CP. But what would you say is the one thing that should give Pels fans hope that they're at least a playoff team next year?
They have a ton of flexibility this offseason, right? Like, with all those picks to trade, you know, I when push comes to shove, I think they're either going to bring Lonzo Ball back or they're going to trade him for something good. And if you want to just condense this as much as possible, like, Zion might win MVP next year. I don't think it's likely, but when you look at the talent, like, the dude was posting Shaq numbers in his second season. I know there's a lot of turmoil here. I know that the last two seasons have been pretty frustrating. If I were a Pelicans fan, I would just be shaking my head and saying, all that matters is Zion. All that matters is Zion. We'll figure everything else out. We have the most important piece.
At Sam Quinton CBS, go give a follow, especially Pels fans, since he just gave you a little pep talk. Are we putting a sticky note? We do a sticky note wall over here of predictions,
so,
Sam.
So Sam, I'm putting a
sticky
note.
Oh, we are trimming it to it. Sam
Quinn.
Quinn.
Okay. 6/29/2021. Zion.
MVP.
MVP.
MVP candidate. All right. Thank you, Sam. We'll take that. We'll put it on a sticky note. Nah, man. Look, this is where we are. This is where we are, man. Anytime that, especially, you know, you might have heard of Chris Paul and Anthony Davis and you know what happened.
Yeah.
There, so.
Listen, let's just say the third time is going to be the charm. I don't know if he's going to win MVP next year, but like the point is, you have to start. That's the hardest thing.
There we go. Sam, thank you for your time today. Enjoy the rest of the playoffs, sir.
Thank you, Sam.
You too. Thank you.
At Sam Quinn CBS over on Twitter, CBSSports.com, the NBA section. Josh, I promised I'd come right to you, man. Thanks for holding on, sir. I'll come to you right out of the breaks. The Sports Hangover at ESPN New Orleans. Round and round it goes.
Shrimp boats is a-comin'. Since 1948, that's 73 years, Alario Brothers has been in the commercial fishing and shrimping supply business, stocking large selections of 12-volt electrical and hydraulic single and double drum winches and hydraulic motors with brakes, beltless clutches, and pumps with brackets. They also carry hydraulic stainless steel skimmer winches, hydraulic valves, and hydraulic steering for up to 65-foot boats. Also a huge assortment of crab traps and crab trap wire, stocking nylon, plastic, and knotless webbing. You heard about that new webbing, Tina Knotless Dyneema. Alero Brothers also stocks shark tail netting that's reinforced with stainless steel wire. They stock four different sizes of galvanized stabilizers, also stocking a large variety of fiberglass cloth, including resin gel coat and other supplies needed for fiberglassing. Lost an anchor? Alero Brothers stocks anchors from 5 pounds to 100 pounds. Visit Alero Brothers before the season begins. That's Alero Brothers, 894 Avenue A, West Wego. Online at AleroBros.com.
Shrimp boats is a coming.
Summer heat is approaching, and so are the Red Hot Deals.
Red Hot Deals.
At Craig LeBlanc Toyota in Houma. Shop online at CraigLeBlancToyota.com or at the store. Great offers like the sporty 21 Toyota Camry or the Corolla with class-leading gas mileage and complimentary 2-year maintenance. Or the stylish and dependable 2021 RAV4 and Highlander. Stop by Craig LeBlanc Toyota and make this a summer to remember with your new Toyota. Only at your number one volume dealer in Houma. Craig LeBlanc Toyota.
Offshore workers are among the most important members of the Gulf Coast workforce. When a person working offshore or on a vessel is injured, the effects on their family can be devastating. At the King Firm, we are proud to have experience with these types of cases and make it a priority to see that our clients receive just compensation and are treated fairly. If you've been injured, don't play the game of claims with the insurance companies. Ring the King at 504-909-KING or 888-241-8766.
Pick up the phone.
We want you to be on the show.
Now back to the Sports Hangover with Gus Kattengau.
Chauncey Billups being introduced as a new head coach of your Portland Trail Blazers. The 1997 sexual assault allegations has been a story. A reporter asked about it.
Hi, Jason Quick with The Athletic. You said the 1997 incident shaped you in unbelievable ways. Can you maybe elaborate on that and how it helped shape you?
Jason, we appreciate your question. We've addressed this. It's been asked and answered, so happy to move on to the next question here. Wow.
What you don't see is Chauncey and the GM were about to talk, and they cut it off. Josh, thanks for calling Sports Hangover on ESPN New Orleans.
Thanks for taking my call, Gus. I was driving on Vets, and I heard the QB, QB discussion with Hill and Jameis. Yeah. For it to be a QB competition, you would need two quarterbacks. And from what I've seen, all we have is one. So I don't understand how fans like Maddie can get behind a guy that has 15 total touchdowns his entire career. You know, he's 31. You know, I mean, when is it going to happen? You know what I mean? Like, when is it going to happen? You know, Sam Darnold last year in a third of a season had more career touchdowns than Taysom Hill did his entire career. So, like, I'm just, as a Saints fan, let's move on. Let's stop doing this crutch player in Hill. And I get it. He's a gimmicky player. He's great. But, like, we have a 5,000-yard passer on our roster, and Saints fans actually think he's not going to start. It's unbelievable to me. So I just wanted to call and say that. Saints fans need to get off this Hill train. It's getting really annoying.
Thank you, Josh. Appreciate it. Maddie, maybe you have
faith. I don't have faith. I think the Winston train is equally annoying.
I don't know. He's thrown for 5,000 yards in an NFL season. I know you're going to bring up the interceptions. I get it. He threw them. It happened. He also threw for 5,000 yards. He also threw for 30 touchdowns in the NFL.
Like, don't look back.
And he didn't make the playoffs because football games.
Is that all him, though? Is that all him?
I mean, Tom Brady.
Drew Brees threw for 5,000 yard seasons, right?
Mm-hmm.
Three of them, they didn't make the playoffs.
Yeah, I think we all know the reason for that, but I don't really understand, like, I'm trying to reconcile the Sam Darnold, Taysom Hill stats comparison thing. Like, his career is, like, one thing, but I don't know. I'm clearly the minority here. Mm-hmm. I'm just trying to be fair.
That's okay.
And I
How
think
dare
that
you. It's okay if you think Taysom Hill is your
hero.
What are you doing? Are you typing in and just playing it on Google Translate right now? Is that what you're really doing?
And here's my thing, too, is whoever wins it week one might not be the starter by the end of the season. I could see something happening. I actually pointed to the Seahawks game, which I think is week 7 after the bye, as the critical point of juncture.
What are you doing over there?
Nothing.
You're not even listening.
I got a word for you.
Quiet.
Yeah, that's what you need right there. How about that?
I don't like this person's voice.
Well, it's going back and forth, too, between two different people. Never know.
Yeah, are you changing them?
No, I'm not. It's okay, Maddie, for you to, have
faith
in Taysom Hill. It's okay. It's completely fine. It would make for a good story. It would make for a good story.
I just think that the way that the NFL is moving, I, like, think that Sean really wants a mobile quarterback, and every quarterback that they've tried to look at in the draft, like Lamar Jackson, Patrick Mahomes, I know we're joking about Ian Book, but he's also mobile.
Oh,
I think
no
that
chance.
I'm sorry.
Well, I'm not saying that
I typed
Ian Book
in Ian
is
Book.
A future
I didn't
quarterback.
Know why that
I'm
came
just
out.
Saying that, like, if he didn't have that running around the, like, line of scrimmage at the Senior Bowl, he probably wouldn't be on the team. But just like Kyle Shanahan watched Josh Allen demolish their team and realized he needed a mobile quarterback, I think Sean really wants that in his future quarterback, and I just think it's imprudent to completely discount that as a possibility, because I think that if he actually can become a decent quarterback, there is an element of, like, versatility to that, whereas people keep telling me that Jameis Winston is mobile. I mean, that's not something I'd think of when I see him. Listen, if he could – it's not like I don't want him to do it. It's just that I don't know. I know it's a bad sample size, and I know that you can't really judge quarterbacks when they come in the middle of a game, but it was the failure to see linebackers crossing the midfield, which was exactly the issue pre-LASIK, and everyone saying that these things were going to be fixed. And to me, it just didn't appear like that decision-making or that vision
pre-LASIK
had changed, and this was post-LASIK. So
A lot of people are riding very, very hard on that LASIK surgery.
Oh, LASIK really missed an opportunity to, like, start a partnership with Jameis Winston, because if it doesn't work out, then that's over. But if it does, then there you go. But, yeah, a lot of people are riding on that. But just, again, from what Yeah. I saw in person. Yeah. I got a bad feeling. It's not something that's unteachable, but at what point? Someone brought it up earlier. He's in the NFL for 7 years.
You heard it here first.
He's been in the NFL for 7 years. Quarterback for 5.
What?
0-17 coming from Maddie.
All I know is I saw that Broncos game and I made my
judgment.
You know, that's all I'm saying. When it came to Taysom, Orlando got about 2 minutes here. What you got, sir? Hello, Orlando.
Hey, how you guys doing?
Doing well, man.
I've been watching football for a long time. In defense of Maddie, Steve Young didn't become a starting quarterback until he was 32. So there's still time. But I went back and I checked. Like I said, I've been watching football. I remember Taysom Hill in college. His completion percentage was 45%. Awesome athlete. Really couldn't complete the ball. Dynamic one. In the defense of Jameis Winston, number one quarterback coming out of high school, took his team to a national championship at Florida State as a freshman. The other year, when he got to Tampa Bay, it was kind of a depleted team. They built up. He made the playoffs 1 year. That is 1 year that he took 20 interceptions, and you're going to throw away his career on that. I really think it's an injustice. Let's give him this year. And to say that what you didn't see a lot for him coming into the halftime game, let's go back to the Seattle game. I mean, not the Seattle game, the game prior to that when they played the Rams and Teddy Bridgewater came in, I think in the first quarter. He didn't really look good. But after he got time to work with the Rams and they catered the offense toward him, he smarted everybody else.